Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It's the Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. The Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything when it's game time. Have an experienced player to help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
So, here we are again, boys. Here we are again. The Lakers lose, and the blaming begins. And look, I think we all started with the premise of LeBron James is great. He'll make everybody else better. LeBron James is great. He can fix so many of your flaws. LeBron James is not the problem. LeBron James is the solution. And the truth is not that LeBron James is the problem, but the truth is also that he's not the solution. The truth is not that LeBron James is no longer great, but the truth is that LeBron James is no longer the greatest. The Lakers lost last night to the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, for full context, we have to understand the two teams. Matter of fact, three of their last four losses were against teams that have designed their rosters and frankly played in a way late in the season in which, you know what? I'm not going to say they're tanking, but they're better off losing than they are winning. Is that fair? Is that a fair way to say it? Now, I told you heading into the season, one of the things that we could not create a calculus for was how everyone else would play, would get up for the Lakers. And I do think that's something we're not discussing, which is you become everybody else's biggest game. And with some of the finger pointing that LeBron James has done during his time as a Laker, there is some accuracy to, you know, the fact that everybody else comes ready to play. They're not just going to roll over and die for you. That's what happened last night in Memphis. The Grizzlies were ready, even though the Grizzlies trade away Marc Gasol, even though the Pelicans didn't play Anthony Davis. Both of their last two teams, which are, for lack of a better word, tanking, both came ready. Why? Because sometimes it's cool to ruin somebody else's season. And that's exactly what New Orleans has done. That's exactly what Memphis has done. But we thought, and maybe this is conventional wisdom, that LeBron James needed another superstar to help him ultimately win a championship. The truth might be that LeBron might need another superstar because he no longer is one. We deal with dated information all the time. Don't you hate that? Don't you hate having to update somebody on something? Right? Like, all of our memories are not like your computer. They don't just send an update in the middle of the night and then you have to restart it. Right? Once you restart it, you're up to date. That's not how our memories are. Especially in sports, we deal with dated information. And sometimes for good reason. Kansas last night beat Kansas State. Why? Because Kansas always seems to find a way to beat Kansas State, and Kansas always finds a way to win a Big 12 title. But they're not close to being the best team in the Big 12 this year, but we're dealing with dated information. LeBron James is 34 years old. He's listed somewhere in the 260 neighborhood. He missed 18 games, 17 in a row, then one game with load management coming off of a groin injury. It's not an innocuous injury, but it also isn't an ACL. You know, wasn't anything serious with his knee, with his hip, with his sprained ankle, right? It seemed like something that it took him a lot longer to come back from than normal. On the other hand, that's actually normal for 34 years old. Maybe that's the problem. LeBron James is an extraordinary, which we use the word extraordinary basketball player, and an extraordinary human being. but he is just a human being who plays basketball. And suddenly, he looks like he's 34. He looks like he's coming off an injury. He looks like he's played 16 consecutive years. And he looks like he's not only the best player in the world, he's not a top five player in the world. We thought the premise of the argument for LeBron James needing another star was you put two superstars together and LeBron shown he can compete with anybody, at least in the East. But it now appears at least possible that LeBron James needs another star so that we can hide the fact that he's no longer LeBron James. He doesn't move the way he used to. He can't lead the way he used to. And though he's become a much better shot maker, his jump shot has always come and gone, especially when he can't get to the basket and he has to rely on contested shots because he doesn't get by people. Like, look, all this said, they're one fuzzy block charge call away from winning on the road in Memphis. But we thought that LeBron's people panicked to go get Anthony Davis because the players around him weren't good enough. When maybe, just maybe, the reason the Lakers and LeBron James team panicked was because they realized LeBron isn't good enough anymore. This is all normal. This is all par for the course. You get to a certain place in life and your body doesn't react as it used to, especially coming off injuries. Injuries happen more often and they keep you out longer and they slow you down more when you come back. This is all ordinary. And the problem with LeBron James is he's been extraordinary. But he's been an extraordinary human being. And human beings are 0 and 7 billion against Father Time. And maybe here's the thing I'm wondering. How does it get better? Because we all, like I said, dealing with dated information. Well, you know, you put LeBron okay. Next year, he's a year older. And it's a lot harder to, he's still going to be 6'8". He hasn't been able to guard guards in a long time consistently. And now he has to go out and guard on the perimeter, and you're not going to move better. You can do it for a short period of time. You come out of the box the first couple weeks of the season and take some time off in between, and you come out and you can, but the ability to do it for 82 nights plus the playoffs, even if he misses 10 next year. You tell me somebody at 34 who looks better at 35. Well, LeBron will lose 10, 15 pounds. Well, he'll be in better game shape. Yes, but he'll be a year older. And he'll be harder to hide on defense and less apt to go by people on offense. Right? Like, look, he has put off this downward trajectory longer than anybody else. But his contemporaries are Dwayne Wade, retiring. Carmelo Anthony, out of the league. Chris Bosh, retired. There's a reason that all those guys are retired and LeBron James is starting to fade. Because that's what happens in your mid-30s. And just like sometimes you wake up in the morning and you're like, wait a second, I have gray hair on my chin. When did that happen? It's not like you shave off those gray hairs like, all right, they're gone. They're not going away. No, next time there's more. And then next time there's more. I'm like you. I started thinking they needed better supporting guys to be around LeBron James. There's a chance LeBron James becomes one of those supporting guys if he wants to succeed in the future. I'm not going to hold against him the comment that we're only taking the answer to the question about distraction with, because we'll play for you later the actual question which had distraction in it. And I don't think Luke Walton coached his best game. And I think that Luke's probably going to get fired and there's going to be some massive changes there. But the only thing that anybody should actually care about is, what if LeBron James is not only not the best player in the world anymore? I handed that mantle to Kevin Durant going back a year and a half ago when he destroyed LeBron James in the first NBA Finals against the Cavs. But he's not even a top five player in the NBA. Maybe not a top 10 player in the NBA. That sounds like blasphemy, but you're dealing with dated information. You're looking at it at his stats. And if you saw the stats from last night, you'd be like, wow, you know, triple-double. He wasn't bad. Now he's 8 for 23 and couldn't guard anybody and didn't move particularly well. Did he get a 50-50 call that didn't go his way on Joakim Noah late in the game? Sure. But if you asked anybody who's actually watching, take the names off the back of their jersey, and would you take Giannis or LeBron right now? Would you take Kawhi or LeBron right now? Would you take Kyrie or LeBron or James Harden or LeBron or Paul George or LeBron? Like, really, I can keep going if you would like. It doesn't mean that LeBron hasn't been an all-time great. It doesn't mean that LeBron isn't still in the conversation as being the greatest of all time. I've never believed he is, and I think some of the ways in which he's handled it, some of the other nonsense and some other stuff we'll get to takes him away from that discussion. But just because you get old doesn't mean we can't say that when you're young, like Michael Jordan was old when he came out of retirement in his late 30s and played with the Wizards. I'm not holding that against him in the greatest of all time argument. But just because you were in the conversation of greatest of all time doesn't mean you still are.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
James Harden's streak of consecutive 30-point games came to an end. Only had 28 points. But they did win the game, which is what's important. But what's the narrative been about James Harden's scoring streak? He's only done it because, well, he had to, right? It was the only way for his team to keep their head above water, wasn't it? Wasn't that the whole thing? Look, he doesn't want to score 30 a night, but, you know, unless somebody can step up and carry the team, when Chris Paul was out and Clint Capella was out, he had to do it. That's an accurate depiction of what everyone who covers and is in the NBA has said. Not like, yeah, you don't even James Harden. Remember, Kobe Bryant came out and said, hey, you know, you can't win a championship that way. And James Harden said, look, I agree with you, but for this particular moment in time, I have to. And you have no dissenting voices. And I'm not even a dissenting voice. And I'm not a Harden guy. I respect the game. I don't like the way it's played, but that's okay. Everyone has said, like, look, you know, you without two starters, without your other star, like, that's what you got to do. Right? And they've succeeded in keeping their head above water. And now they're getting healthier. And now he doesn't have to score 30 a night. Granted, they beat the Hawks. But still, I get it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Dan Byer is out. He's playing golf. I know that because I follow him on Instagram, and he's playing golf. He was like at Pinehurst yesterday, maybe even today as well, that Dan loves a good game. So Friday, he'll guest host for me because I'm guest hosting for Colin Cowherd. He'll have a co-host. His name's Dante Jones. Of course, he was a star at Duke in college and played in the NBA, won an NBA championship alongside LeBron James, and kind enough to sit in for me on Friday. Of course, you see him on all of our Fox One TV shows. He does a great job. Dante joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What did you think of how the Lakers played last night?
I didn't. I thought they gave it a good effort. I just didn't like the way they finished the game, and obviously the plays that LeBron took off. Like, I just thought that he could have given more effort in some of those instances, and I think the lack of defense, of team defense, has been his Achilles heel this season.
Yeah, it's interesting because before he got hurt, they were like top seven across the board defensively. Now, some of it was Tyson Chandler just seems to be running out of gas from the time he was traded. And they don't have Lonzo Ball.
Right.
But LeBron being different than he used to be, like, has he aged? Is it coming off of injury, not being in shape? Why isn't he able to be as active defensively as his reputation would lead you to believe?
It's looking like a combination of coming off the injury and not being in full shape like he normally is to make the plays that he normally awes his teammates and the fans ultimately with. Those two put it a little bit harder on him because he takes such of an offensive load that with rebounding the ball and assist and making plays for people with assists and scoring also. So it looks like his conditioning coming down the line after that injury is what's been hampering him and making him seem like he's looking like he's lost a step or what may have you at that point in time. But I don't think he's lost anything. I just think that he's in a different type of shape right now according to where we're at in the season and according to what he normally looks like after, because he's never had an injury like this before.
Is it possible that he's also lost a step? Like, he is 34. He's played a ton of hoop, like 16 years in the NBA. I mean, Dante, I don't know how you move, but I played in the NBA celebrity game 1 year. And I remember, like, Rick Bucher was like, man, Tim Hardaway is coming for you. Mitch Richmond's coming for you. And I remember watching those guys run. It was painful to watch them run. And look, they had been out of the NBA for a couple of years. But the idea was, like, look, when you wear so much tread off your tires playing the NBA, and he's played in 8 straight finals, is it possible there's just some tread worn off? And yes, the injury is a part of it, but part of looking slower is 34, 260, whatever he weighs, and the tread's worn off.
Well, I'm not thinking that's what it is, because there was a point in time in the season where he was looking like the same old LeBron. I think it's going to come a point in time where he plateaus for a little bit before he starts to fall off. Like, I don't think it's just a 1 year you're doing amazing things and you just fall off the next year. No, he looks like he's been looking like himself at a point in time before the injury, and I thought he could get in better shape than what he was at that point in time. But now he's taken 2 steps back with this injury and possibly gained a little weight. And that could be why he looks a step slower. But it just is what it is sometimes. Some of these injuries you cannot bounce back from and be yourself with, especially in the lower extremity, like the groin area. Like, that's tough to come back and just be as athletic or be as fast. Like, these things are something that he normally doesn't deal with, and now he has to and adjust and fight through it, and that's normally, like, not what he's used to doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I understand that guys live a different lifestyle than I live. I understand that some guys don't need sleep. But the 2 chains thing was the night before he was supposed to have the day off of playing against the Golden State Warriors in a locker room with LeBron James. Is that a bad look?
Especially when a team is struggling at this point in time to find an identity and to go on a run, I think it was a bad look. And that just comes, you just chalk that up to experience at this point in time. Like, he may have not looked at it from a full perspective of how it could affect his teammates. He probably was just living in the moment. He probably got a call and was like, you know what, come by the studio and let's do this. But it ultimately has had an effect on how the perception in the media, his perception to his teammates, especially coming off injury, it does look bad, and it looks like a decision that probably in hindsight he may have went another direction.
How fixable is this in the off season?
Very fixable, because he gets an opportunity to heal. Let's say they make the playoffs, or they don't make the playoffs. If they make the playoffs, they may last a round or two, but he gets more time for his body to heal. He gets the first full off season to heal. They get to make some roster adjustments, and they understand what he needs more. They understand his personality and what he brings and what kind of personalities mesh well with him. I think they get a chance to build that team up another level. And I think they come back fresh, and whoever's left, they get to understand expectations on how they need to grow, what they need to do to be next to him. And I think it moves in a better direction next year.
Dante Jones joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What about the Celtics? I watched them against the Bucks, and that looked like a prize fight, right? Back mm-hmm. and forth, Kyrie and Giannis, and obviously the Bucks end up winning. That's going back to last Thursday night. Great basketball game. But there's a struggle with consistency there. There's a struggle with integrating Kyrie and Hayward hasn't looked the same with the guys that went to the Eastern Conference Finals. Do you think they can fix themselves before the playoffs?
I don't think they can. I think it's a matter of what the perception of what Kyrie might do in the offseason. It's a matter of those guys, the young guys, knowing that they're possibly not going to be there after this playoff run. They may have too much talent at this point in time, not enough minutes to go around to so somebody can have a defined role and know what to expect on a nightly basis. Like, guys sometimes, when they don't know what to expect from their minutes or don't get enough minutes, their performance can directly be affected, and it can be tough for a guy, because if you could, last year when you were getting 25 minutes a game and you guys were winning, and now you may be getting 17, and those 8 minutes could be a portion of your time when you got the most of it done, it could affect you mentally, and it could affect your performance. So it's just a lot of variables going on with that team right now because of just the expectation to win.
Dante Jones joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. So who do you like in the East?
I like Toronto because they've been through the playoff wars. Their roster has been through playoff wars. They've added some nice pieces in Marc Gasol and Jeremy Lin. And I think they've been through the grind of this playoffs. Milwaukee seems like an amazing regular season team. I just don't know how they're going to be able to take these bumps in the playoffs, but they did get shooting. They have a little bit of experience. They seem like they have a chip on their shoulder. I think that would be a great conference finals matchup, but I think Toronto ultimately pulling out with a closer in Kawhi and Giannis getting the ability to see what it takes to get to that next level. But he's having an MVP season. I think those two are the teams that look forward in going forth in the conference finals.
DeMarcus Cousins got a technical, which has since been rescinded, where a shoe was on the court and he threw it off the court. I thought that was standard operating procedure, right? Somebody loses a shoe and you throw it as far from the court as possible.
You know what? I'd have got the same tech because I thought that was standard procedure too. Like, if somebody's shoe was out there, I'd have thrown it in the crowd and we'd have got a couple of laughs off of it. I didn't see that was necessary. I didn't see, like, I just, that sometimes the refs can be a little too overcritical on these plays, and it depends on who the ref is, because some of them will laugh at it and let it go or not pay attention to it at all.
So what's the craziest technical you've ever gotten?
My craziest technical?
Yeah.
Is probably the last technical I got in the playoffs when we were playing Toronto, and I had a dunk, and I just told the young fella, you better not jump, and I got a tech for it.
You got a technical for that? You got a technical for saying you better not jump?
Yeah, you better not jump.
After getting a dunk?
After getting a dunk.
Yeah, so it wasn't like a threat. Like, because I know guys that were like, you better not jump, thinking like I'm going to take out your legs. It was, you better not jump, like, you know, he's talking trash after you get a dunk.
Right. You better not jump. It was at the end of a game, so just in competing, just having fun. Like, you better not jump. And then I ended up getting a tech. I got kicked out this game for this. Ended up getting a tech. And then one of the other young guys on the team came up to me, don't talk to my guy like that, and started yapping. And I said, I didn't even curse. I got thrown out of the game by not even cursing. Like, what? Or what?
You said you better
not talk to my teammate like that. I said, or what?
Yeah.
And I got a tech and got kicked out. It didn't happen that fast.
Yeah, and then have you gotten kicked out when you were in street clothes? Haven't you gotten a tech or been in civvies and got kicked out?
I got a tech on the sideline. Kevin Durant was yapping to our bench. And I got up and said, listen, man, like, you must have some, like, protection, because this is not you. Like, this is not you. This is not how you normally get down. And he walked over and started talking to me and said something crazy, and I responded back. And now he walked over to me, and I got the tech because the ref could not see what he was saying.
It's amazing because KD has gone from, he was a guy who early in his career said a lot of fake tough guys in this league, and now he's kind of become this wannabe tough guy. Like, when did that happen?
That was I was at the beginning of it. Like, I was like, listen, that's not you. That was my play to him, because I was speaking to all the words that were being thrown around. Some words you just can't say to another man. I was speaking to that. If my teammates weren't going to stick up for it, like, I was like, listen, this is getting out of control. Like, you got to watch how you talk to another man on the court, because it could turn into something that doesn't have to. And now all of a sudden you just turn into this enforcer when this is not you. This is not the guy that we know. That was where I was going with it. And I got a tech.
Who's the baddest boy in the NBA to cover right now? Not historically. Historically, you'd go, you know, if you want to go LeBron, fine. But I think we'd both agree. Like,
to cover? I'm yeah. Michael Jordan, historically, no. I would say.
Well okay, I'm in right now.
Right now?
Yep.
The hardest cover in basketball right now? It seems like Giannis.
Because he's just so right? long?
Because he's so long, and he's getting wherever he wants to. And then he has a nerve to be shooting threes right now. And that is something... Because people have to give him space because he can get the basket so well.
Right.
So he seems like you really can't stop him from getting a dunk or getting a layup without having to foul him. Like, it's all about his will, his motor, him being in shape, that he can dominate a game in transition in the half court by his athleticism and his length.
But in the playoffs, you'll be able to climb into him, right? You'll be able to body him, and you know, the hard part about Giannis is if you play off him, he gets ahead of steam and he can just, you know, do one of those high dribbles over you. So you gotta do the PJ Tucker with Durant and get to his body. But Durant can make right. those difficult shots, whereas I don't think Giannis is at that point.
Well, you're right, and you cannot discount Kevin Durant. Like you make a great point. Kevin Durant makes tough shots. He finishes with the best of them. He's probably the toughest shot maker we have right now because he can get to any sport, any place on the basketball court, and he can shoot over basically everybody. PJ is a unique cover for him because PJ is strong enough to take away his space and push him to certain spots on the basketball court, but he has to ultimately have somebody behind him like Clint Capella to be able to protect the basket. So Kevin Durant is up there. Like, he actually probably is number one. I'm sorry. But Giannis, this is where like the playoffs is going to come into play out because the physicality goes up another notch every level that you go. So is he going to be able to fight through this next level of physicality? Because it's not going to be like the regular season. So that's why I said Toronto when you asked me before, because I want to see how he fights through contact in the first round and the second round. And then ultimately conference final comes, and then like it's really like no holds barred. So.
Plus they got Kawhi, who, you know, I mean, it's going to be amazing to watch. Hey, you can listen to Dante Jones this Friday, filling in for me with Dan Beyer. It'll be great stuff. I can't wait to listen as well, driving home from doing Cowherd. Dante, thanks for filling in, and even more appreciative of you joining us, giving us your insight.
Of course, I can't wait, guys.
All right, it's Dante Jones joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Bob Nightingale, who on short notice was kind enough to pick up the phone when we called, MLB insider for USA Today. That's because what's normally the hot stove leagues suddenly is now part of spring training baseball. Bob, this is a weird year. Weird year. First, let me just go back to last week. What was your reaction to Manny Machado in San Diego?
Well, it would have been surprised about a month ago, you know, when then they jumped in at $280 million, you knew they weren't playing games. So then it became a two-team race between them and the White Sox, and just strictly outbid everybody. Outbid the White Sox by $50 million. Certainly the Padres were not his first choice by any means, being so far away from his home in Miami. But, you know, to be one like that and, you know, again, 10 years became a no-brain decision.
I guess my question is, like, of all the guys to give a 10-year deal to, Manny Machado seems as risky as anybody who's not a pitcher. And then in a place like San Diego, where, you know, you're going to enjoy yourself because it's the, you know, arguably the greatest city on the face of this earth. And they haven't been competitive. And I know that they're always a year away from being a year away. And I've heard all the things about their farm system. And I want to buy it. I don't know how, if a guy who showed he would not give as much effort as you'd like in the biggest game in baseball, what's he going to give you in San Diego if you don't have a competitive team around him?
Well, that's the question. I mean, 26 years old, and he plays a ton. You know, I want to say he plays, you know, 158 to 162 games every single year. So he's there. I mean, he plays. But, yeah, that's the one worry, too, is that the team's, you know, not competitive, particularly for the first couple of years he's there. You know, not strong veteran influence there. You know, you don't have a guy like Adam Jones or J.J. Hardy or Chase Utley, you know, leaning on you. You know, you kind of wonder. Lackadaisical city, you know, very, very chill city. So you wonder if that'll have some effect. But, you know, I do believe once they start playing good baseball and everything else, you know, that whenever that year comes, you'll see a very productive player and, you know, he's one of the top young players in all of baseball.
Bob Nightingale, USA Today, joining us. Okay, so then we're waiting on Bryce Harper. And everyone assumed it, at some point it'd be Philadelphia because their owner comes out and says they're going to spend stupid money. And then there's rumors of them getting close. And then the Nolan Arenado thing happens earlier today. 285, an extension. And, you know, like, look, we're in Los Angeles. Long rumors that he ends up being an, either an Angel or a Dodger to come back home. Do you think that's what changed the Dodgers going back after Harper? Or do you think they were always in there with a shorter term, bigger money deal?
I think always in their short term. You know, the fact that he's still out there. So, you know what? Let's see if he's willing to go short term. Let's go talk to him. But I think Arenado, I mean, I think the Dodgers knew he was staying. Yankees knew that, too. You know, the owner, you know, Charlie Montford came out early on in February. He said, we're at the almost at the finish line here. We're going to get this done. So I think he's so comfortable there that teams could not count on him coming out. Just like Mike Trout. Mike Trout's very comfortable in Orange County. I think people would be shocked that he left the Angels just because of comfort level.
Do you think that this causes the Angels, though? I mean, they're still 2 years away, but if you're the Angels, do you go in now and go like, all right, here's a check. You figure out how much it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Angels are probably thinking, okay, we got Machado at 300. We'll see what Harper comes in at. We saw what Arenado is. And you go over all that. So, you know, if you're the Angels, you know, you're starting at 350, but, you know, probably, you know, reality, you're probably starting at around $400 million, you know, for, you know, 9-10 years.
So what is the difference in what you heard? Bob Nightingale, USA Today, what is the difference you've heard in the terms of the Dodgers and the reported terms of the Phillies as of now?
Well, I think if Harper went to Dodgers, he's going to leave a good $150 million or more on the table. I can't see him doing that. I think it'd be embarrassing to him since he turned down $300 million for the Nationals. Be humiliating for the agent, Scott Boras, you know, to take a short-term deal when you number one that. Granted, he liked Dodgers. Probably Yankees are probably his number one choice. Dodgers number two, particularly being close to home. A little tough to leave that kind of money on the table, you know, for him to pivot and do that. It almost be a desperation move.
Yeah, but couldn't he in his own mind, if he gets an early opt-out clause, put himself right back on the market and capitalize on a market that we all think it's going to level off, and it still hasn't?
Well, it could, but there's, you know, no guarantee. You know, then the other part of it is like, well, is he afraid of playing in Philadelphia? You know, which, you know, city with an edge, you know, a passionate fan base who want expectation and everything else. I mean, you win there, you know, you're a hero forever. The one thing about the Dodgers is the Dodgers have won six straight, you know, divisions, you know, two straight National League pennants. They lead the world in attendance every single year. So what are you going to add? You know, maybe a game or two? So it's not like he can come there and say, hey, I got the Dodgers to the World Series. Well, they're already on the brink of it anyway. I mean, they've been there the last 2 years. You know, if you win it, fine. But just not that big of a difference.
No, it's fascinating. There's still a group of unsigned players. I think Jeff Passan wrote a piece where it's like, hey, it's not 100, it's more 50, and now we're creeping down. What about those quickly forgotten unsigned veteran players? What ultimately becomes of them?
Yeah, we're only talking about 15 players now, you know, or so. You know, at some point, you know, Dallas Keuchel's going to have to decide, okay, I may not get my 500, may have to take a 3-year deal. Craig Kimbrell won 6 years at 100. Maybe it takes a year or two and hits that market again. You know, some of the other guys, you know, Adam Jones, maybe instead of a 2-year deal, he has to take a 1-year deal. So some guys are just going to have to back down from what they wanted and hope the market changes next year. But, you know, it's either take the money that's there or sit out, and nobody's going to sit out.
No, they're not going to sit out, and it stands to reason that this is the market, right? No middle class. No middle class, as we saw some of the veterans get pinched last year, and now some of these, you know, mid-level, big-money guys getting pinched this year. Bob, great stuff. It's a fascinating time in baseball. Can't wait to see where Harper goes and how it affects the landscape. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure. Take care, Doug.